Hi, and welcome to She's the Boss Chats. I'm your host, Jules Brooke, and in the show, I interview amazing women and female founders about what it is that they're doing and why they're doing it. It's all about us lifting up the women around us. So Pinky Mackay, just one of my favourite people and obviously a woman with incredibly great, good taste in pink hair. It's great to have you on the She's the Boss podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Jules.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's start so that everybody knows a little bit about you. And I'm sure there won't be very many people that haven't. If they've had a baby, they'll know about you. But what is it that you do now?
Now, well, I'm actually a lactation consultant, which means that, you know, I do thousands of hours supporting, learning about breastfeeding and boobs and babies and mouths and mums and infant health. And so I work helping support mothers who want to breastfeed. And yep. Also, through that, seeing mums, you know, visiting mums in their homes in those early days and seeing mums hadn't eaten any food. No one was looking after them. I started to make, you know, I'd been handing out recipes for years. And of course, nobody can cook. They can't even make a sandwich. They haven't
a
even
recipe
had a
for
shower.
What?
You know,
I know. You can't. You don't have time to do anything in that first couple of weeks for sure.
No. So anyway, I started a business called Booby Foods and or Booby right. Brands and started with a couple of SKUs of different kinds of bickies, and off we went. You know, I gathered the people, but that will come in the story later, I'm sure.
So you're selling booby biscuits and you've also got booby cereal, haven't you?
Yes, booby brekkie.
And why is it called booby? What does it do?
Booby brekkie. Well, the ingredients are nourishing for breastfeeding mums, and they also support lactation. You know, they have lactogenic ingredients is what, you know, the label is. For yep. these kind of foods that support a healthy milk
and
supply.
And it's amazing. Now, so it's really like eating an oatmeal cookie and if you're a breastfeeding mum and suddenly your milk comes in. And I know it works because my neighbour who was about, I think her baby was about 2 weeks old, I remember, and I was trying to sort of bring over food and she was going, oh, my milk. And I said, and you had given me some. I don't know why you thought I would want booby bickies other than to look at them on the desk. But I gave them to her. And the next day she said, oh, my God, I was flooded with milk last night. So it really, really works.
Yeah, well, it depends. You know, women can have underlying physical reasons right. why their milk supply is low. You know, and look, and it can be a thing like a baby not feeding effectively. So those things do need to be addressed, of course. But, you know, it's just lovely that these mums have got a treat, better than chocolate. It's
yes.
not going to give your baby a bellyache. And also, you know, the research is not, we're actually doing some work with the university at the moment, you know, doing research. But the crazy thing is, you know, even if it's placebo, it's amazing. And we had our best testimonials from a woman whose dog had 8 puppies. And 3 weeks in, this dog's milk, you know, disappeared, and the pups were chasing the dog all around the pen trying to get at this poor mother. And the neighbour of this lady who owned the dogs gave us some booby bickies. She fed them to the dog, and within 24 hours, that dog's lying down with full tits feeding her 8 puppies. And I'm just laughing, going, I don't think the dog thought it was placebo.
I wonder if that's a whole market, new market for you hadn't thought of, pet food lactation. Anyway, moving on. So tell me, why did you set it up? What happened that made you want to set it up in the first place?
Well, it was really, a friend said to me, you know, have you heard of lactation cookies? I said, oh, hell yeah, I've been making them for years. I used to make them for all my friends when we had babies. I said, you know, and I give mums recipes. I said, I've got a recipe in one of my books because I'm also an author. You know,
yes,
I've got
you are.
5 books.
And video, and you used to have videos. I think we first met maybe 20
yes,
years ago when you did
a
baby
DVD.
Massage video.
DVD
right.
back in the day. I have that online as a video, you know, so that people can download it. But
yep.
yes, so yeah, I'm also a baby massage instructor, you know, trained as a baby massage instructor. So they've got lots of that baby background
yes,
type
do.
Of stuff. But yeah, anyway, this friend said to me, so why don't you make them? And I sort of went, poo-hoo, I've never made food. You know, my kids complain about my cooking, except they will eat my baking. And the idea just didn't go away. So I came back to Melbourne and I happened to mention it to my designer and he said, my housemate manages a bakery. I said, I'm coming to see him. And look, that very same week, within 3 days, another friend of mine, and we'd done Ali Brown's mentorship together for a year in the States, and
right.
she's from Newcastle, and she rang me and said she'd been to lunch with this amazing woman.
Yep.
It turned out to be Cindy Lucan from Lucan and May Foods, who'd sold her cookie business to, you know, for millions.
Right.
And I said, give me a number. And I rang her and I said, what would I need to start making cookies? And she gave me the number of a food technologist in Melbourne. So I connected her, I connected the bakery person, and next thing I knew, I was sitting in Vizzy asking them, could they make a carton like a milk carton? Like my ideas just kept coming. And I had no idea how to even make a carton or what was involved or how you printed or designed or anything. So I had my designer, I had a bakery, I had chefs, and I had the food technologist all to guide me.
Isn't that amazing? It all just came together, like the universe was saying, you have to do this.
It was just like the universe was saying, come and do this.
Yep, amazing.
Yeah.
So was there a bit of a light bulb moment when you decided to start doing it, or was it just that thought that just kept on going around in your head?
It was that thought that just kept on going, and me thinking, well, you know, I can't do that. It's whenever I find a challenge, I go, how can I meet it?
Yes.
You know, like, oh, when it's money, how can I make that? You know,
yep.
so I'm more of a how can I do it person than a that's not possible person.
Which is, you know, and I would encourage anyone listening, that is the mindset you need to have, really, if you're going to be an entrepreneur and be successful. You just have to believe in yourself, back yourself and go for it.
Yeah.
So let's go right the way back to when Pinky was a little girl, and I want you to tell me the story to now about your entrepreneurial journey. But what happened? Because I bet when you left school, you didn't say, when I grow up, I want to make milk enhancing food.
Oh, no, I didn't say
food.
I want to work with mothers and babies. I was actually asked to leave school.
Oh, were you?
I was 16 and the teachers had called my mother in for a meeting. Yeah. I mean, as an adult, I have been diagnosed with ADHD. No. I don't even think it's a, you know, it's not a handicap. It's not anything.
No.
It's just you're a multi-focused, you know, thinker kind of person. Anyway, I was called in. I'm not sure which incident that was. You know, I'd been kicked out of maths and went out in the sunshine at the back of the school and took my uniform off and was sunbaking, and the headmistress walked around the corner. She wasn't happy with me.
I can't imagine why not, setting such a good example and all.
You know, my bestest subject was English, and my English teacher just used to point to me and say 3 or 5 or 2 or whatever it was, point to me and give me a number, and that was how many laps around the oval I had to run before I was allowed back in the class. And, you know, I was a great athlete at the time.
Oh, my God. I'm glad I didn't have that. They just made me stand out in the corridor.
So my mother was called into a meeting with the teachers, and she said, I'm not coming to any more damn meetings. You can do what you like with her. I've had a gutful of her too.
Oh, lovely.
Well, my mum actually had a lot of mental health problems. She has a bipolar disorder that wasn't diagnosed in those days. So by the age of 12, my dad was a truck driver, couldn't read or write. He had dyslexia and had left school at 10. So by 12, I was actually doing his accounts and his books. And every night, my mum was in hospital, in a psych hospital, and I would get out his diary and I would take the big black diary and I'd write down the jobs he'd done that day. And at the weekend, I would do, and I was still at primary school.
Wow.
And I would do his invoices and take them to the post office on my way to school on Monday.
That is amazing, isn't it? I mean, you'd hear about the toughness, and I'm not saying that there aren't loads of kids doing it tough at the moment, but, you know, that's pretty full on doing that at
that's
such a young age.
But it was actually just my reality. I didn't know any different. I mean, you know, and I remember one of my memories was about 8. You know, I had a baby sister and I absolutely loved babies. Never thought I'd ever work with mothers and babies, but I did love babies. And I remember having her on my hip as I called the doctor one morning for my mum, and the doctor went to wash his hands. Someone had vomited in the hand basin, and I had a baby on my hip while I washed out that hand basin while that prick of a doctor stood there and watched.
Oh.
Like, you know, there's just some of those memories that you go,
stick in your mind.
I will never be unkind to a child.
No, that's a very good point. So, okay, so you're 16 and you get kicked out of school. What happened
then? And I left school, and my mother took me to a hospital about an hour away, because, and I was 16 and a half, and they accepted me to do nursing.
On the spot?
on the spot.
And wow.
But I think what they saw was an able-bodied, you know, young woman that they could put to work, because we worked 6 days a week in those days. And so you could get a 13-day fortnight, you know, and right. then get 2 days off if you got 2 days off. Yeah, and we got paid $28 a fortnight.
Oh, isn't it? It's just
bought
crazy,
a uniform,
isn't it?
Supplied, and by the second year, my room was at the top of the fire escape. So I did not worry about curfew.
So you lived in with nursing? Is that sort of, because I know that's how it works at the
yeah,
Alfred
you lived
place
in.
Like that.
So that was really good for my mum, because she didn't have to worry about me anymore. Other people were in charge of me.
And how long does a nursing training take? Is that 2 or 3 years?
Well, in those days, the course that I did was, yeah, it was about 2.5 years, nearly 3 years.
So did you stay there, or did you move on once you qualified?
No, I stayed there until I was qualified, and then I started went travelling.
Oh, where'd you go?
Well, I came to Australia. I was heading to the Olympic Games in Munich.
Yeah.
And I met a man in the pub, and I ended up hanging out with him. Well, I went to Sydney first, actually, and I...
Where from? Are you from New Zealand originally?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that. So you came to Australia.
Yeah, and I went to Sydney first. I had a one-way ticket and $80, I think, I'd saved up. And I bunked in with a friend that was from school, and she'd had a baby. You know, she'd got pregnant when we were about 17.
Right.
And she'd had her baby. And so I stayed with her for a couple of months. Then I moved out, but I met a girl who was a hairdresser. She had a salon in Cronulla. And
don't tell me that's when the pink hair started.
No. Her apprentice had left, you know, left her in the lurch. So I was doing shampoos and stuff for her, cleaning her salon. And she sent me off to Revlon to do a course in manicures and makeup.
Right.
And at nights, I got a job in a nursing home at night time. So I'd work a couple of nights a week, and then I'd, you know, just change my clothes, have a shower and go to the salon. And, it was the days of green eyeshadow.
That's just conjuring up an interesting image. So what did you do after? So you've trained as a nurse,
but you're
not doing
nursing. So then I came
down
to Melbourne, right. And I needed to live in again. So I went to a hospital and I got a job, and I worked in radiology at the old Panch Hospital. And, you know, we used to go to the Croxton Park Hotel, and someone gave me a key to the nurse's home. And if you came in through emergency, you could actually use that key to sneak back in. Because we had curfews in those days, you know, 11 p.m. you had to be in.
Right. Let's not talk about curfews. For anyone listening, we're right in the middle of the Melbourne.
We're in Melbourne. We're having 8 p.m.
And it's 8 p.m., not 11 p.m.
Sneaking in.
Okay, so what happened after that? So you've trained in nursing in Melbourne. How long did you nurse for?
I don't know, years off and on. But I then got married, and then I had one baby, and I was actually travelling by tram. We lived in North Melbourne. We got a little apartment in North Melbourne, and because I was pregnant with my first child. I'd been on the pill. Oh, something else funny.
What?
You couldn't get the pill unless you were married. So one of the girls lent me her engagement ring so I could go to staff clinic and get the pill.
That, you know, that would be incredible for probably some young women listening to think that you couldn't get the pill till you were married. I have a lot of family in Ireland, and Ireland only took the pill off prescription, so you had to go to the doctor to get it. Not took it off prescription, sorry, gave it to unmarried women. It was like 1994 or something. It was so recent.
Wow. Well, I was on it for years for my periods, but, you know, I was still a virgin then. So my girlfriends who were getting pregnant were saying to me, "You're wasting that bloody pill." But no, then we had our first baby, but I was travelling backwards and forwards to North Melbourne on the tram over summer because he was an April baby.
Yeah.
Getting bigger and bigger and bigger, working, you know, and there was a heat wave on that year. So it was pretty full on. And then I had him, and I was seriously the only person I knew breastfeeding. And I went to the doctor.
Really?
Yep. Yep. There was a doctor's wife and a dentist's wife in North Melbourne who breastfed for 3 months, and that's what you did. And it was in the 70s, that's what you did.
So breastfeed for 3 months and then move on to formula, is it?
Yeah, that was a good start. Like, right. Nobody even thought there were any benefits after that. Whereas because I'd come from New Zealand, because I'd nursed in maternity wards in New Zealand, I actually saw how quickly women's uteruses went down, how good their boobs were while they were breastfeeding. Now I was Mrs. Flat Chest, so I decided I was...
You were going to breastfeed 20, for as long as possible.
I was a young mum and I was going to breastfeed through summer so I could wear a bikini finally. And anyway, I went to the doctor at 8 months and I had a lump in my breast. I'd had a terrible start because my son was in NICU for quite a while. He was a big fat baby but got an infection very
What's
early
NICU?
On.
Prenatal?
Neonatal intensive care unit.
Okay.
Yeah, and then readmitted to hospital, you know, at 6 weeks. So there was a lot of hard stuff and I didn't have any family around. So, you know, I just had to tough it out. You know, so I knew that struggle of a new mum, and 8 months I went to the doctor with a lump in my breast and he presses my breast and out squirts the milk in the doctor's face. You know, he said, oh, are you breastfeeding? Turned out I had, you know, I was starting to get mastitis, but I didn't even know what it was.
Oh, right. And he probably didn't know either hardly, did he?
Well, he wasn't too bad. He figured it out. But my cheerleader then was a beautiful elderly woman, Mrs. Goldberg, who was at the fruit shop. And she would cut a piece of apple off and give it to my baby. You know, and she would tell me how she'd breastfed through a concentration camp for 2 years. She'd managed to keep her baby alive.
Right.
So, you know, amazing. So she was my cheerleader.
So did that sort of, I was going to say, plant the seed of, you know, I'm just going to do this for as long as I want.
You can keep doing this. Yeah. And so that was it. And when about 9 months, we went back to New Zealand and we lived there. My husband got a job there because housing was pretty expensive compared to our wages in Melbourne. And we thought we could do that in New Zealand. We did buy a house in New Zealand. But I went to the Leche League to find out how to wean my child.
Yeah.
And found out that I didn't actually have to wean him. By then he was 12 months old and walking around. And I realised he could wean himself. You know, it could all be gradual because yeah. I was getting anxious. And, you know, my mother, you know, in those days, if you don't wean that child, you'll lose your husband.
Oh, you'll lose your husband. Nothing to do with the child.
No, because you know what? You're giving that baby so much attention. It was in those days. Even the books, the magazines were all telling you how to keep your marriage going because you had to mother your husband.
And
you
know, looking after the husband and not the child, which, of course, has flipped completely now. And there are, I guess
yeah,
maybe that's why.
Yeah, there's got to be a happy medium.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when did
And that was the start of my, you know, then I became a breastfeeding counsellor. And I also worked weekends as a nurse. In the maternity ward.
Right.
So, you know, I was back into that mother sort of mode again. And then when we came back to Melbourne about 5 years later, once again, you know, I went to a nursing mother's meeting with my 6-month-old baby and was told this is our night out without our children because it was my third baby was 6 months old. And I just thought, well, screw the lot of you. I don't need this bullshit.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, yeah, and there was a lactation physiologist, a scientist at Ruakura, which was near Hamilton where we lived, who worked with dairy stuff, but also had invented an amazing breast pump. Now, it was a big thing on wheels that you had to wheel around the ward, but it actually had soft cups that pulsated. It was electric, the first electric breast pump.
Amazing.
Because back in the day, there was a whole glass thing with a rubber bulb at the end and you squeezed it and it wrecked your nipples. But
right.
That was all I'd had when my baby was in the nursery. And so I learned to be really good at hand expressing. And I could probably teach a mother how to get milk out of a rock, you know, like,
yes, right.
I'm so good at this. But and I went to Sydney to a conference to demonstrate this milker. And I took my 6-month-old fully breastfed baby with me. And I was told to put her in the creche. And I said, well, I'll go and sit in the creche with her. And I came back and I went, bugger that, you know. So I actually started a Leche League group in Melbourne. We got to 3 groups. So again, it was supporting mums. And because it was an international organisation, there were lots of other women from, you know, there was a woman from Turkey, a woman from Germany, a woman from UK, women from Ireland. There, you know, expats that all got together and were still friends with some of those women.
Oh, fantastic.
But it also was more about mothering than just breastfeeding, which... Yes, breastfeeding, mothering through breastfeeding, I guess, which, again, filters in through about the work that I do that this mother needs to be supported.
Yeah, I know. You've always been a big champion of the mums and to, you know, understand the, because it is, you know, I mean,
it can be hard. There's a lot of emotional stuff.
Yeah.
And the mother has to be happy. You know, it has to be about her goals, not my goals.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I can say, look, I breastfed for years, but you may not want to.
So when did you decide to go out on your own? Like, was this around that time that you started offering lactation?
No, it was actually when I was pregnant with my fifth child, my bonus baby.
Did everyone hear that? Fifth child, yes.
Yeah, my bonus baby, because I had, my oldest children was almost 16 and almost 18. I had 4 kids in 10 years, and then I had this little surprise.
Right.
You know, and I always called him the bonus baby, not the afterthought or anything, because it was a bonus.
Yes.
You know, he's a beautiful young man now, but, you know, this bonus baby. And
how old you were when you had your last one then?
39.
Oh, yes. So I would say that was young. That's when I had my twins. But, yeah, it's getting towards the tail end.
Yeah. I mean, it's still young enough, but it was just, you know, that I'd already had 4 kids.
Yes.
And then I'd go,
you're fifth.
Far out, I'm pregnant.
Yeah, I bet that was an interesting conversation with your hubby.
Well, it was more interesting with my teenage sons.
Yeah.
There's a KFC ad or something like that on at the moment, and that was almost what they did. They looked from one to the other and in unison said, you don't still do it.
I know. That's what I was thinking. They'd be grossed out by that.
Those teenage boys. So anyway, when I was pregnant with him, I had threatened to miscarry with my other girls. But by then, I had started, now, before him, when Sarah was 2, so that was about 5 years before that, I was homeschooling my kids, and I actually got into copy school, which was run in Melbourne around the top 8 agencies.
Can I ask why you thought of even asking to join copy school?
Well, I did it. I was homeschooling my kids, and I saw this thing in the paper and thought, what an amazing exercise to do with my kids. It was really creative.
Okay.
Because I wasn't following a curriculum. You know, I was learning as that. You know, I was sort of facilitating everything as they wanted to know. I mean, yes, of course they had to do their maths and they had to do their writing and reading. But, you know, this was an interesting side thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had to come up with a brand of instant coffee and you had to write, you know, an ad and you had to come up with some names for it and all this stuff. And then I read it and I thought, I think I'll send that in. I thought it was some sort of competition.
Right.
And then I get this letter. They took 10 people a year and had 2,000 entrants. So, and you went around the top ad agencies in Melbourne 2 nights a week, you know, and I had a 2-year-old breastfeeding child.
How amazing.
You did weekend workshops at Warburton, and I took my 2-year-old breastfeeding child with me to the weekend workshops where everybody was in black, black and black in the 80s.
Yes.
And, you know, it was the Simon Reynolds time, the bowling ball ad, all of that.
And babies weren't really the accessory du jour, were they?
They weren't the accessory, no. Very expensive alcohol was. We had a talent quest and I won the talent quest.
Wow.
So I just did a comedy thing, you know, and I won the talent quest, went home with an absolute massive magnum of champagne and my husband was going, what the hell have you been doing all weekend? I got kicked out of one of the client briefing because a client would come on the Friday night. I get kicked out of that because my 2-year-old wouldn't be quiet and still managed to, you know, do a campaign.
That's amazing. There wouldn't be a hell of a lot of mums of 5 with a newborn that would be able to do that. So did that sort of put a bit of fire in your belly to go out on your own?
Oh, yeah, because I was doing, you know, I was doing my own thing, you know, doing the advertising copywriting. And then I have Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune disorder, which fair from that. But I actually came up with this massive lump in my neck and everybody thought I had cancer. I didn't. It was an inflamed thyroid, which triggered my health problems. And so I couldn't get out. I couldn't even walk past the letterbox for 6 months. So I couldn't even get out and see clients and write their ad copy because I was doing ad copy for a lot of local businesses.
Oh, so you actually moved into ad copy as opposed to lactation nursing at first.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't done it. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise. I didn't realise. Yeah. Okay, yep.
And so because I couldn't get anywhere, I actually wrote an article and sent it in to the Herald it was in those days, the afternoon paper, to the Education Age, and it was about homeschooling. And then someone else saw that. No, it was the Age, that's right. Then someone from the Herald saw that article and contacted me and said, can you come and write for me? It was that easy.
Oh my goodness.
So I was writing for the Herald and I was writing for the Age because you could do both in those days. And Rosemary West was running a feminist page in the Age
Yeah.
and she was giving me assignments. So here I am sitting there with a breastfeeding 3-year-old by this stage on my boob. Thank God we didn't have video phone. And she's directing me to get out and do write about a one woman play of King Lear.
Right.
And I had to go and do this for the feminist page, you know. So, you know, and I'm trying to keep this kid quiet. So, of course, I pull up my jumper because that'll shut her up.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, if you could see me now and you think I'm going to write about a one woman play of King Lear. So it was all good fun. And yeah, and then when I fell pregnant with James, I know I was writing for baby magazines as well. You know, I mean, when I realized I could make money writing, fit it in around my kids, off I went.
Right.
And you know, I sort of say, you know, I wrote the house paint, you know, I wrote the kitchen reno, you know, all those sorts of
Well, I
things
know
that.
now. I mean, in the time I've known you, you're amazing and you're always getting publicity. So I didn't realize it had started so young.
Yeah. Well, it's been going for years. And then because I was writing for baby magazines, someone approached me, I think it was Prentice Hall, some publisher approached me to edit a or translate edit an American book
Yeah.
to Australian stuff. And when I read it, it was about, you know, talking to kids. The title was the whole page, you know. So I called it How Do We Tell the Kids? And it was the whole page of the cover, you know, talking to kids about really important things, blah, 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 blah. And when I went through it, I went, this is so conservative. You know, don't, if you're talking to kids, you have to talk about the hard stuff.
Oh,
So
right.
it was, you know, if you have a miscarriage, don't tell your children to you're pregnant too soon, because if you have a miscarriage, you're going to have to explain that. And I'm thinking, for God's sake, mummy's going to be a little bit disconnected. They might need to know. So I went out and
There's something
interviewed.
happening, yes.
Yeah, there's something. So I went out and interviewed all the experts, and you know, and I'd say to them, because in those days, because it was pre-internet, so you didn't have people talking to you like you were a person. You know, it was the intellectuals were up there, and then mums were down here, and we didn't get that information. I mean, it's flipped on its head now. We have so much information, we don't trust our intuition. And I did a
Right.
TED talk about this too, you know, about surrender's not a dirty word was my TED talk thing. But you know how we used to have intuition, but we didn't have knowledge. But now we have so much knowledge, we don't even trust our intuition, and we need a bit of both. But
Yeah, that's
yeah, it's
very
something to be all
wise
in.
words there, Pinky.
Yeah, well, I think as mums, the human race would have died out if we didn't have a little bit of intuition and common sense and
Absolutely.
imprinting about how to mother, whether we loved how our own mothers mothered or not. I mean, they all
Yeah.
had some good stuff in there, even if they weren't fabulous.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I think my mother was quite wise in some ways, you know, to push me out of the nest. But you know, and so anyway, that writing went on, and then I started editing some magazines. And then one of the magazines I was editing was A Bargain Shopper's Guide to Melbourne, because somebody had fallen out of that, and the publisher I was doing, you know, they got me to do a baby book,
Just
and because
handed
I
it
was
to you. Go and do that one.
pregnant, go and do that one. And then I got a radio show. I was
Wow.
on 3AW, Ernie Segley and Cara Wilson and people like that were doing the afternoon show, and every Friday I would have a bargain of the week, and cars were turning up at these bargain outlets as they were driving past. Like, I hadn't even got off the radio, and the people were just, you know, oh, can you
Amazing.
do me next week?
It's amazing, actually, the power of radio, just to, as a little aside anyway. A lot of people don't think about it, but it is so powerful, particularly for
Yeah.
people in their cars.
Yeah, people sort of think it's a second-rate thing, but people in their cars,
That's the
you
first
know,
thing you do,
listen to,
turn on the radio.
well, you'll be doing podcasts now if you're in your car, if
I'm
you're
still
allowed
doing
out.
radio, but I hear you.
Yeah, so you know,
So.
it's everything just evolved from that. And then someone came at me with a book. Oh, what was it? It was a baby book or something, you know, that I'd done. And oh, that's right, because I was seeing all these mums, I was seeing that flip from intuition to intellect.
Yeah.
And I thought, we need a book that doesn't tell people what to do, that encourages people to,
Think
you
for
know,
themselves.
you do need evidence around what safety is. But apart from that, you know, you do need the evidence, but then you need to home in on what feels right for you. And I always say to mums, is it safe? Is it respectful? And does it feel right for you? And if you can filter that, you know, all those noises out. So I came up with the idea for a book called Parenting by Heart.
Yes.
And I rang a publisher, and it was Lothian in those days. I rang up and I asked them who their acquisitions editor was. I didn't quite know the name, but yep. They told me, and there's this lovely woman called Elizabeth. So I put the phone down and then I rang Elizabeth and told Elizabeth I had this idea. And she said, we don't do parenting books. I said, but I was having a lovely chat to her. And I said, but if I just send you a one pager, would you be able to tell me where I could send it? And so I sent her a one pager, and next week I was having lunch with Elizabeth. And she said, we want to do this book, but we want you to do it for fathers too. So I went out and interviewed lots of parents, and I was saying to the men, you know, nowadays we would say partners.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fathers, and saying to them, I don't want to know how you change nappies or anything else. I want to know how you feel. And these men were teary. Nobody ever asked
the father
how they feel. And so I intersperse all my books with parent stories, because I think it's lovely that it shows that there's more than one way.
Yes, I think that I agree.
And, you know, if you can identify with another parent and how she feels or he feels, you go, well, I'm not such a bad person after all. You know, I'm not a crap mother or a crap dad, because someone else feels like I feel. You know, it's really nice. So with my social media, all that sort of stuff, I always put in, you know, stories and things that you can relate to, whether that's around anxiety or postnatal depression, or whether it's around breastfeeding grief, or whether, I mean, when I was working with you doing the media accelerator, you know, I did an article, When Breastfeeding Goes Tits Up.
That's right. I love that heading.
And then I changed that from press release, and I've used it as a blog, and I've interviewed mums about their feelings, you know, so it's not about judging, and it's not about a right way, because there's so many other influences.
Well, yes,
that come
exactly.
Into it.
But let me bring you back now to your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
So you started writing books. You had the radio show. What happened after that? I mean, that's amazing.
I was at a conference, and someone said to me, "Why don't you do your lactation training?" And I went, "Oh, again, you know, like I just keep having these little seeds." And I went onto the website and looked it up, and I went, holy crap, I have got all the background. I just need to do the study, because you had to have had a certain number of hours, you know, actually
helping
teaching mums about breastfeeding, yep. You know, and I'd done that as my, you know, I was doing that as my nursing work, because I was still doing some agency nursing and things like that. So, you know, I had done that as a nurse. I had also done it as a breastfeeding counsellor, and I did the study and sat the exam probably a couple of months later, like really quickly. A lot of people
right.
do that study
yeah.
over time, but I just did it. Thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. I either know it or I don't, you know, and went and did it and flew through, got amazing marks, and then started in private practice.
Right. And so
that was sort of entrepreneurial. I mean, the writing obviously was entrepreneurial.
It was. All of it was. Look, you obviously clearly, it might not have had that name, but you clearly decided that you could make a difference and that you wanted to go out on your own and stop listening to all the naysayers. I would say
yes.
That's entrepreneurial.
Yeah, I never did. And I mean, even when I started Booby Bitches.
You never do, I would say to this day.
Yeah. Even my husband was saying to me, you know, what the hell are you doing? You're going to lose the effing house. And I went, I have no debt. I have absolutely no debt.
Yeah.
You know, it took me $10,000 of savings to, you know, pop in, and some of that was on a credit card to pay for the cookie packaging.
Yes.
And, you know, everything else, I was still working as a lactation consultant. So I still had my day job visiting mums, getting that money, putting it into that business.
And it was such a good decision, because it happened really fast that it just took off, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty quickly. I mean, within, my daughter was still working flight centre manager, and then she got a job part-time at the airport doing flight centre in Sydney. And it was the funniest thing, because we needed, you know, all of a sudden we needed a loading dock, because she was getting Bicky sent to her in Sydney and she was shipping them out.
Yeah.
She was doing all that work while I did all the publicity, which, again, I didn't pay for. I wrote blogs for every mum and baby website in town, I think. You know, I wrote blogs for them for free, magazines in exchange for ads. You know, I did contras left, right and centre, which meant that I wasn't paying money for, you know, advertising. I was doing, you know, contras.
Yeah.
And she was madly doing the, you know, she's very good with the money section. Now she lives in Dubai and she's got a baby of her own that's 3 months old, but she still manages our money. But when she, you know, and then she, we had the loading dock we needed. So she was using the loading dock at Sydney Airport completely illegally. And getting the biscuits delivered, you know, to the loading dock at the airport. And she would put these cartons of Bickies in her big cartons of, you know, 24 packs in a trolley, run them across the airport to her Yaris.
Right.
Tiny little car.
Yes.
And then take them to her apartment, which was up 3 floors with no elevator. So she'd get the vets upstairs that lived next door to her to help her lift all these boxes. Then they'd have to come back down again and go to the post office. And then it was probably 12 months later, and we were at a baby expo in Sydney, and she said, my job's to get a warehouse this week, because it had filled up her apartment, you know, the lounge room, the right. hallway, the spare bedroom, because her flatmate had moved out and gone off with her partner, you know, so she didn't get a new flatmate. She just filled up that room with
right.
Bickies and got a warehouse. And, yeah, and then, you know, probably 12 months later, 3 years in or so, 3 or 4 years in, she, it would have been 4 years in, she got married to a pilot who got a job. Well, she hadn't even got married at that stage. He got a job with Emirates.
Right.
So he was off to Dubai. She was going out with this guy for quite a while, and I'm laughing. She was just going to go over there and live with him. I said, it'll be stoning, darling.
Not in Dubai.
So... And she found out that was true, and he arrived back with the diamond and everything else. But when she was about to leave, my autoimmune disorder had flared up again, and my daughter-in-law was saying to me, what do you want to do? Because we were 3 years in, yeah. and we had hit 7 figures
Fantastic.
As turnover.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, we've taken off now. We've got a really, you know, we've got a smooth operation because we started off online, but now we were going into shops.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite amazing how... that growth had happened. I mean, obviously we'd made it happen.
Yeah.
You know, you hustle course, and you go to course. Shops and you suggest they might like to have these products and things. Anyway, my daughter-in-law said to me, but what do you want? Because I said, look, if we have to sell, we have to sell. You know, it's a shame, but my relationship with my daughter's more important than a business. You know, oh, there'll be something else. And can I say I was 60 years old when I started Boobie Bickies?
I know. Actually, I didn't want to ask, but well, I should have asked anyway. But yes, that's very exciting.
No, and I don't mind.
Well.
I don't.
No,
care
you should be bragging, and I'd be yelling it from the rafters.
Yes, because I don't think there's any barrier. You know, you can still do things, and it's about your energy and your enthusiasm, and about, you know, how you think. I guess nothing. You know, you can be a young entrepreneur, but you can also be an older woman and do it.
Well, that's right. And, I'm 53. I've only started She's the Boss this year, so yeah.
Yeah,
I'm here. Yes.
There's no limit. You could be going till you're 90 and you could have 5 more businesses in that time.
Exactly. So but, don't let you know, age hold you back is what we're saying.
Yeah. And when my daughter-in-law said, what do you want to do? I said, I really need another Sarah. And I said, what's Kim doing at the moment? And Kim was her best friend from school, and I'd known her, you know, I seen her at kids' birthday
parties. She was in the parenting space as well, because she had the belly belt yes. thing, didn't she?
Yes. She had a baby business at one stage too, but she'd gone back into corporate because her kids were a little bit bigger. And she was working as HR. And so she said, give her a ring. And she'd obviously given Kim the heads up. And Kim says, well, I don't want to just be a manager. I said, I don't want a manager. I want a partner. She said, well, go and talk to Sarah and see what you actually want. And it just went from there. It's just been the most perfect match because there's 3 of us and people like we won Oz Mumpreneur last year. But the question everyone asks is, how do 3 partners work? And I just go, respect, communication. And we've all got different skill sets. I mean, we can pop in when someone else needs, you know.
Yes.
Can say, look, I haven't got time to do X. Can you do this? Which is probably more in her bag. But I can do the same to someone else. You know, it just works.
Yeah.
And we totally respect each other's skills. And
you're very lucky. Did you have you've got a contract between the 3 of you with an exit clause in case anyone wants to get out or not?
Yeah, we've got contracts. Yeah. It's all legally done, but you know,
no, because having, you know, there's my mum always goes on about never do business with family and friends. So, yeah. Which of course,
oh, everyone told me that they all said all sorts
they
of strange
all do.
Things. Someone even said to me, never do business with a Greek. Now Kim's family background is Greek, and I just went, I've never heard that one.
No, I haven't heard that one either. That sounds like prejudice.
And who cares? You know, there are people that are super, and we've got the best team, and we actually run the business very mum friendly, which has worked very well with the COVID thing because we were already online And we have other breastfeeding support products as well, you know, that complement,
yeah,
you know, beautiful, gorgeous bamboo breast pads. And I was in the States, and Sarah, I met up with my daughter. I'd gone over to speak at a breastfeeding conference in Philadelphia and met up with my daughter in Los Angeles. And we found this amazing bra that's a pumping bra as well, well as a breastfeeding bra.
I remember
bra.
You showing me the photos of that bra. That was hilarious.
Put two pumps.
You put two pumps inside the bra and you basically sit there with those two bits
and
coming out.
And you can
out.
Do what you like. You can rock your baby. You can make a cup of tea. It holds those
places
pump
in place.
Flanges in beautifully. Which my daughter's using
possibly
it at
the
moment.
Possibly the most unattractive bra you've ever seen, though.
Hey? Yeah, it's you know, and that woman, you know, we ended up in, talk about entrepreneurs, because the girls there go back to work so early. So we met up with the girl called the Dairy Fairy.
Yeah, great name.
Which is such a great name.
Such a great name.
And we're sitting in a cafe in Santa Monica as she's opening her shirt and showing us her bra and how it works. So,
brilliant.
You know, I just think women in business can collaborate. They can do amazing things together.
I 100% agree. All right. Now, along your entrepreneurial journey, I was actually going to say, are there any women who've helped you? But I'm not even going to bother. I'm going to assume there have been loads of women, including your two partners. And yeah. Is there anyone pivotal that you want to mention that, you know?
Well, I would say Cindy Lucan, because she's still, you know, I can still say to her, she's now started a business called Luke Beauty Food.
Right.
You know, and
that's right. She makes lipsticks you can eat.
Yeah, well, they are all made from food ingredients, so you're not absorbing, you know, you're not absorbing chemicals. But, you know, she's been amazing. And I can say to her, look, I want a producer, blah, blah. Do you know someone who can do that? You know, or she can say to me, you know, can you give me a connection for whatever? Because our big turning point was getting into Chemist Warehouse.
Right. So how long had you had the business before that happened?
Six years.
Oh, right. Oh, it wasn't fast. But that was the change.
No, because you have to be big. And they came to us.
Oh,
and,
brilliant.
You know, that which was a real coup. Now, all of a sudden, at the last minute, they wanted to know the size of our cartons, even though we'd given the buyer our cartons.
Yeah.
And wanted to know the size of our cartons. And they were just a few centimetres too big for their planogram to fit on their shelves.
Oh, dear.
And this was Friday at 5 o'clock, you know, 4:30 p.m., and we needed to know by Monday. And we went, oh, shit, well, they're milk cartons. Can we cut the top off? I went, yes, quick, let's cut the top off. So we found a carton manufacturer who could quickly make us a carton. By Monday, we had that meeting. Tuesday morning, we dropped off, and my designer, I worked over the weekend to get these measurements right, wrapped it round, made a fake carton, took it in on Monday morning and said, here you are. You know, so we were totally able, and in business, this is it, pivot quickly.
Yes.
I know pivot's a hard word, but, you know, again, with COVID, this has worked. You know, that look, the big thing the last few days with the shutdown, we've been up till all hours of the night. Now, we did a COVID preparedness plan and, you know, sterile handling and checked our supply line, you know, will the bakery, because our bakery had lost all the airline contracts.
Oh,
they
right,
lost
yes.
all the cafe contracts in the first shutdown. So will they be viable to do our production? Which they have been, thank God. You know,
fantastic.
But they've been, you know, all this sort of stress in the background around that. And then we put in a COVID plan. Now, my husband was actually an emergency management consultant at a hospital. He's retired, but
handy.
He had done the COVID planning for a major Melbourne hospital. So we got him in to do our, you know, sterile procedures and who has to do what. So we had a written plan signed by all our staff by the end of February. Now, over the last few days, now that we've gone into total lockdown in Melbourne, you have to fill out all these official forms for the government if you want to keep trading. You have to fill out permits for your employees.
Yeah.
So we've been filling out forms like crazy women and then getting him to check them as well, you know, that all the details there.
But you should be all right. And it is, I mean, they've said emergency food and things like that and normal food should be all right. So hopefully
we are all right.
Yeah,
because
great.
We don't have a big warehouse and we'd already put in place that, you know, one person goes in the morning, everyone else can work from home, which we had already set up because We have mums with children, and in school holidays, some of them can work from home. You know, if they're doing admin work, they can do that, email it through. Someone in the office can print out all the labels and all the manifests for shipping out. And we have one girl coming at a time to pack. So we've really sorted that out with our, and everybody has their own utensils, you know, your sticky tape, your box cutters, all that stuff. They're all labeled with the girl who's going to use them. So there's, everybody's had masks. There's gloves there for unwrapping the pallets. You know, there's...
Well done.
We've done PPE preparation right from the start.
Yeah, those businesses that didn't prepare would be devastated right now. Well, Pinky, we're getting very close to the end. Yeah. I love your story. Is there a quirky fact about you that most people don't know? Talk about putting you on the spot.
Okay, I joined a skydiving club when I was 19.
Are you serious? Did you skydive?
I'm serious. In Sydney, Bankstown. Yes.
Amazing. Yes. That's a great one. And also, just talk to me a little bit. I forgot to ask you the question about your work-life juggle. Like, now that you've got this kind of big business with your daughter and her bestie, what sort of hours are you working? Do you get your weekends off and your evenings off, or are you working through?
Look, I think I do a bit of work most days, but I don't, I can, you know, juggle it a bit. You know, there'll be appointments where I have to do things.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, with COVID shut down, but it might be a Zoom call, or it might be a meeting or something like that. And, you know, I mean, I can write a blog at night if I want to. I can schedule social media posts over the weekend if I want to, you know. So it just fits in around. And before the lockdown, you know, I might have grandkids for the weekend, so I wouldn't work. I mean, last year, for the very first time in 7 years, my son took me and his kids, because his wife was studying. We went to Fiji for a week.
Wow.
And I left my laptop at home. I have never done that before.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's a big call. Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
And the world didn't stop, and everything continued.
The world didn't stop. It was amazing. All right there when I got back to it.
It's amazing, isn't it? How you think, oh my God, I can't do it. But if you were really sick, or you'd had something happen, everyone would cope.
Well, occasionally I have had an illness come up, you know, and I've had to put things off, and I've always gone family first, and, you know, health is another big value, and you do what you can do. But I do tend to overdo things. You know, I'm feeling great health-wise, so I'll go like hell, because that's just me.
And then it brings you down again.
Oops, should have pulled in and gone to bed before midnight, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, okay, so now this is just the last little life light-hearted bit of it. I don't know if you love your phone as much as I do, but if you do, have you got apps that you find really useful for business on your phone?
Not for business. My eyesight's not that good.
Right.
So I find the phone a little bit annoying, but I love Audible and I love podcasts.
Oh, fantastic. And in fact, you've been listening to a whole lot of these, haven't you? You'll have to listen to your own podcast.
I've binge-listened your podcast because you have such amazing women.
Thank you.
I just love the diversity of, you know, there's not, again, just like with parenting, there's no one-size-fits-all around business. And I think if you can work it, that it works for you rather than the other way around. You know, there'll be times where you go hard and we'll be, you know, Sarah, Kim and I, because of time differences, the other night it was 11 o'clock at night and we were, you know, on Messenger together.
Yeah.
You know, we'll have a three-way call of some sort and we'll do that together, working out, you know, or planning. But then, you know, the next day I might be in my pyjamas working.
Yeah, nice. You know? I think that's great. Well, listen, thank you so, so much for this. I hope you're going to listen to it as part of it. The one I did this morning was with a woman who founded an oil mine, an oil, an oil company. And now we've got you, who has just been so inspirational. I didn't realize quite how entrepreneurial you were. But really, just from, I'd say from a very young age, you were
stealing soft drink bottles from the back of the Foursquare store and taking them around the front and selling them to get, you know, 4 cents worth of aniseed balls or something.
So funny. So if anyone wants to get hold of you, what's the best way?
My website is pinkymckay.com. Yeah, and Booby Bickies is boobybickies.com.au.
And what
We ship internationally too. So, yeah, so, you know, we've got Hong Kong, we've got a Singapore website, we've got a New Zealand website, we've got a distributor in Hong Kong. Like,
wow.
We have got a big business now.
Yes, and this is only the beginning. I can only imagine how huge it's going to become.
We've just gone onto WeChat too.
Yes.
Well, there's lots of Chinese people in Australia who use WeChat. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, I just can't wait to see what you do next, Pinky. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Jules.
I hope you've enjoyed this She's the Boss chat episode. It was great to have you here. If you want to stay in touch, you might also like some of the other things that we've got going on with She's the Boss. Firstly, I've got the She's the Boss show, which is on Ticker TV. Now, you can watch that either on tickertv.com.au or you can download the Ticker app from any of the app stores. So Apple and Android, and they've got an app that is for your phone, for your iPad or tablet, and for the smart TV. Or you could join us for our free Zoom lunches for female founders that we hold online. The best way to do any of these things really is go to shestheboss.com.au, and on there you can register for the lunches, and I've also got links to the website. So either way, I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm really enjoying digging down and getting down to the nitty-gritty with these women, and I hope you'll join me for the next episode.